Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing great today, too. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you all for tuning in. Today in the Voice of Yoga, we will talk about a statement made by Paul F. Gorman. Consciousness is experience. As another way of saying how we think is what we become. Listen as we will discuss some of the benefits of raising consciousness in order to improve external experiences. In this show, we will share some examples of externalizing the world mind as opposed to externalizing divine mind, as explained by Galatians 6:8. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and demonstrate divine omnipresence with scientific certainty. So, Swami, I see the title of today's show is Proving Divine Omnipresence Today. So what is it that you mean by that? What should we learn from that?
Well, I think what we're trying to get across here is that divine omnipresence is a demonstrable principle, that it is not just something that we believe in. And we're really trying to come out of the concept that really came out of Orthodox religion. The kingdom of heaven is a future life. That is something that we are going to have to expire here before we can attain that. And so we want to understand what the Bible is saying. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's right here. It's right now. And we're going to work today with Paul Gorman's statement, consciousness is experience. Whatever it is that we are experiencing is going to be an indicator of our level of consciousness. And so rather than trying to fix our experiences, what we really want to try and do is change our level of consciousness.
So Swami, the quote by Paul F. Gorman, consciousness is experience, wondering if you can delve a little bit deeper into that for us.
Yeah, the more I started to understand what he was saying, consciousness is experience, he also says it does not produce experience. The more I meditated on that, this means that if we're not having divine experience, we're not conscious of the divine. As you start to troubleshoot maybe your experiences, the thing that we want to be able to work against is, do I believe in the personal sense of life, or am I conscious of the one divine life, which is all that there is? We use our experiences to give us clues, because if we didn't have those experiences, how would we know what we were conscious of?
Well, in the opening, we said consciousness is experience, but it's also another way of saying how we think is what we become. How do those two equal out together?
Yeah, more and more we're starting to see the physical world, the physical experience, is a mental image. And so how we think is what we're going to externalize, and that will be internalized or revealed to us externally as our experiences. This means the physical and the mental experiences that we're having, what we're learning is they are the veil to the divine experience, which is right here and right now. But as it says in Galatians 6:8, for he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Now, what is appearing in our five corporeal senses is really the testimony of what they call the flesh. Anything that is visible and tangible, or anything that is invisible and tangible, is what they mean by the flesh. What I've discovered is most of us are completely unaware of what they're calling spirit. Spirit is the invisible, intangible, and it doesn't report in our corporeal senses. And so if we are unaware of spirit, and we're primarily living out from the testimony of our material senses, then we're in this thought loop. We're in the cycle of death and rebirth. And that has its own rules and laws and everything else. But what we're not aware of is the divine creation, the divine idea. And so that's a big part of proving the divine omnipresence. If you have awareness of the invisible, intangible divine creation, it must externalize in your experience.
So I think what I need clarification on is, are you saying that thinking and consciousness are the same thing?
Well, it's kind of a difficult question to answer, because it's kind of like saying, is the wave different than the ocean? Thinking is what we're doing about consciousness. Thinking is an individual activity, whereas consciousness is an impersonal, subjective state of being. It's a larger, broader sense of thinking. And this is something that we've really been talking about, because we want to understand that there are what we call modes of thinking. Our ability to form thoughts and opinions based on information that's coming through our corporeal senses is not necessarily consciousness, but it is whatever we are aware of. Like he says, consciousness is experience, and thinking is what we're doing on a very personal level. And this is something that we're trying to come out of. What we've been saying, stop thinking, start knowing. Stop forming thoughts and opinions based on the information coming through the corporeal senses, and graduate to this knowing of the truth, knowing the divine creation. And if we are conscious of the divine creation, this is what we're learning, it must change our experiences. If we are not able to change our experiences, then you want to understand there is nothing that needs to happen to the divine creation. The divine creation is perfect. And if our experiences do not have these divine qualities, if it doesn't reflect perfection, then something in between the divine idea and what you are aware of can change. And so we change how we're thinking, and we forsake our modes of mortal thinking and make our mind an avenue of awareness for the divine creation, which is invisible and intangible. And in our awareness of that, we activate it in our experience, because consciousness is experience.
So is that what you mean by, in the opening we said, the benefits of raising consciousness in order to improve external experiences? So thinking will help raise this consciousness?
Yeah. What is appearing in our corporeal senses is our consciousness. But if we can change what we are conscious of, if we can shift from our belief in matter or mind, mortal mind, and now we have awareness for spirit, the divine creation, and our fidelity to that should have a profound effect on our experiences.
So what happens, or what does it look like when we become conscious of spirit?
Yeah, becoming conscious of spirit, the one divine being, and experiencing the truth. And I really like what Mary Baker Eddy says in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. page 14, 12 to 18. Become conscious for a single moment that life and intelligence are purely spiritual, neither in nor of matter, and the body will then utter no complaints. If suffering from a belief in sickness, you will find yourself suddenly well. Sorrow is turned into joy when the body is controlled by spiritual life, truth, and love. What we're learning is this isn't just a statement, but it is a demonstrable principle. Once you really understand what she means by become conscious for a single moment that life and intelligence are purely spiritual, most of us are conscious of the testimony of our corporeal senses. And even a lot of times when we turn away from what's visible and tangible, we turn into what is invisible but tangible, which means that we're still sowing to the flesh. We really don't understand that, but we think we're being spiritual. And so if you aren't using your experiences and proving the presence, that's another thing I think is very valuable about the work Mary Baker Eddy gave humanity, was this concept of faith, which is demonstrating the presence of the divine creation. And we will demonstrate that to the degree or in proportion to our understanding of ourselves spiritually. And the more that we realize what we're calling life, this physical, mental experience, isn't life at all, then at least you're giving yourself the opportunity to change.
So to become conscious of spirit, you're saying we have to stop thinking with the corporeal senses. Then what happens? What are we waiting for?
Like I said earlier, you make the conscious mind an avenue of awareness of the invisible, intangible omnipresence until it dawns on you. See, spiritual light will illumine your thought, and it will resolve things into thoughts, then exchange the objects of sense for the divine idea. Jesus says in the Bible, it is the Father within that does the work. And so a lot of us are trying because we're working with human will. We're trying to do this from a corporeal sense level, as we forsake the modes of human thinking for this divine knowing. It's a graduation where you're literally letting divine mind take over the scientific government of your being. You are now letting this divine creative principle express itself through you. And the way that we activate that is by not interfering with it with our thinking about what we want to do on a personal level.
So, Swami, I wonder, is it possible to stop thinking, especially with the corporeal senses? And what does it look like when we do it?
Yeah, like you say, we're not really stopping thinking, but what we're doing is we're making our mind aware for the invisible, intangible divine creation, which doesn't report in the five corporeal senses, which will appear to the five senses as stopping thinking because there's no stimulation, there's no activity. They are not being exposed to duality, which is a divided consciousness, works on contrast. And so that will appear on a corporeal sense level as stopping thinking. But what we're cultivating by stopping thinking is our spiritual senses. In silence and in stillness and waiting with our mind aware of the divine creation, when that spiritual light begins to dawn on us, and it starts to reveal the presence of this one infinite being of which we all are, that is what we talked about, will correct your thought, and then it will start to externalize as improved experiences.
Well, we're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and 8 Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga.
This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information. Welcome back. For those who are just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami, again, I want to just repeat part of that Mary Baker Eddy quote that you said earlier. Become conscious for a single moment that life and intelligence are purely spiritual. And then she says, so if suffering from a belief in sickness, you will find yourself suddenly well. What does that look like when we're doing it? What are some examples of that?
I have an example here we could use from Herb Fitch's Revelation of St. John, Class 6B, and I'll read it. Now, when you find a sickness, then you have found a non-existence, and you are being untrue to the one divine life. And divine love will not flow into your experience under those conditions. Only when you overcome the belief that there is another place, another life, another self than the one divine life, will you be given the power over nations and the power over materiality. That's the end of the quote. He's given us a little bit better understanding of what she means, and she says it simply that you become conscious for a single moment that life and intelligence are purely spiritual. Now, to understand what she means by spiritual, you have to understand oneness. That spirit is all. Spirit is the universe, the one verse, and it can't be divided. It is absolute, it's whole, it's complete. And what we're experiencing on a corporeal sense level is only a thought about, and it's an incomplete thought about that spiritual fact. And so in order for us to communicate with spirit, we must assume spiritual identity. That's one of the things that we've always talked about is the physics of spirituality, that like attracts like. If I identify with myself physically, then I am attracted to matter. If I identify with myself mentally, then I am attracted to the invisible but tangible mental body, the astral body. Matter and mind is really the veil preventing us from seeing spirit. One of the reasons why they use the term transform, that we have to trans, go through form in order for us to accept ourselves spiritually. We have to go through duality, and then we have to understand ourselves in the absolute. These are things we try and understand in Kriya Yoga with the term avidya. Ignorance, which is mistaking the impermanent for the permanent. It's mistaking the duality for the absolute, the rational for the whole. What we're talking about here is using our experiences to prove how we're thinking. Am I aware of myself spiritually? Because if I am aware of myself spiritually, just like what Herb Fitch says here, you will be given the power over nations, the power over materiality. Now, if you're not experiencing that, he's telling us why you're not experiencing it is because divine love is not going to flow in your experience when you have a belief in something other than the one divine life.
It's interesting that you use the word rational, because when we do find ourselves with a head cold, for example, we can rationalize how we got that. I went outside without my coat on or whatever. So how do we stop how we rationalize these things that are in our corporeal senses?
Yeah, what we're learning is to demonstrate omnipresence, we must come out of the false belief generated by matter and mind by rejecting it and then affirming the truth, which is before thought and above corporeal sense. Consciousness is experience, and our awareness is being hijacked by matter and mind. When we're believing the testimony of our corporeal senses, when we're reacting to our experiences, we're in the trap because we have a belief in something other than this one divine life, which is the truth of our being. By learning how to work what is appearing in your senses to give you clues as to how you're thinking, because like Herb Fitch says here, if you find sickness, you have found a non-existence. If we're believing what is appearing in our corporeal senses and we're reacting to it, we have our back to the one divine life. And what we need to do is have awareness of the one divine life in order to activate it in our experiences. And so by our infidelity to the divine creation, or our ignorance of the divine creation, are unable to prove the presence of it. And where we want to make the adjustments is in how we're thinking, in what we're aware of, and not only in theory, but in demonstration, by proving the presence.
Now, you have spoken before in many shows and in your yoga classes about this mirror effect. So how does that relate to consciousness? What should we learn from that?
The way that we use that is in the same way that you would use a glass mirror in an asana class to evaluate a posture and appearance. We use the testimony of the five physical mental senses to gauge what I'm aware of. And like we had said in last week's show, we start with the understanding there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in the reflection. So what is appearing in that glass, we can all agree that there is no life, no truth, no intelligence, or substance in that. When you look in the glass mirror and you see your face is dirty, you don't wash the mirror. We go and we wash our face. Now, we know the divine idea is perfect, and there is no lack of perfection anywhere. There's only a lack of awareness of perfection. When you look in the mirror and you say, for example, you look at your physical body and there is lack or limitation, now you know that the mirror effect of consciousness is that consciousness is experience. Now, rather than trying to fix your physical body, you want to start to understand that your body is a mental image. But the more divinely mental the image, the more harmonious and indestructible it's going to appear. With our Western scientific approach is we try and fix our physical body. When you go to a doctor, he examines your body, but then he tries to fix the body from the body with material means, or now even with mental means. But here we're starting to see when you graduate to spiritual law, when spirit is cause, creation is perfect. So even say, for example, if you want to try and do this with positive thinking and belief, you find that you can change finite bad to finite good. But to do it spiritually, you stop thinking and you must know that you are the reflection of the divine mind, which is perfect. And your awareness of that perfection of being, your awareness of the divine creation, will then have a profound effect on what is appearing in that mirror.
if I could have you just expound upon another example of that. We're talking about lack and limitation, and you mentioned about the physical body. What about lack with, say, suitable employment? And then Herb Fitch says, we must overcome the belief that there is another place in the life, another self other than divine life. So how do we apply that concept to something that's intangible like suitable employment?
Well, you have to start with the understanding of the divine creation, that it's perfect, that it doesn't need anything added to it or taken away from it. By you reacting to the testimony of your senses and saying there's lack here, you're getting off at the wrong stop. That if you were to pierce through the testimony of the senses, reject the testimony of the senses, and know that in divine creation, everybody has everything that they are supposed to have, everything that we think we need. Remember, on a spirit level, there are no needs. In the absolute, everything is fulfilled. It's perfect. And if we can abide in that and know that to be true and not compete with it with our thinking about what is appearing in our corporeal senses and then employing our human sense of intelligence and trying to plan and figure everything out, then you interfere with the divine law. When you're in the law of karma, everything that you put out is what you get back. That's the law of reciprocity. But when you rise into spiritual law, it's the law of absolute harmony, absolute love. When you start to learn how to employ this and then start to prove it on a regular basis, you see how it's a practical guide for highly effective living and not just a lot of advice.
We've been talking a lot also about impersonalization, so it kind of sounds a lot like that.
Yeah, and I really like impersonalization as taught in Christian Science. In a book that was written, Mary Baker Eddy, Christian Healer, on page 230, she wrote a letter, and in that letter she said, "What our cause needs most is the impersonalization of thought. I see little, if any, growth in this direction. To destroy any effect, we must remove its cause. The first error was limiting mind, or personality, which was supposed to contain mind. Now, to love or hate or fear or believe in this finity of mind called mortal personality is to preserve the cause of all error. No persons can grow into Christian Science until they have grown out of attaching themselves to personality either through fear, love, or hate." That's the end of the quote. Yeah, and like we said, in order to demonstrate omnipresence, we must come out of the false belief generated by matter and mind. And we do it by rejecting it. And then on a positive side, we must affirm the truth. We must know the truth. Life is perfect. It's complete. It's whole. And it's right here and it's right now. And by us having fidelity to that, we must then prove its presence. It must activate in our experiences.
Well, it is that time to start closing down our show for today. So listeners, be sure to visit the website www.ipdtransform.com. On the homepage, when you see the fading banner Blog Talk Radio, just click that. That directs you to the Blog Talk Radio show catalog page. And then also by clicking on the products tab, the online classes, that directs you to all the classes that Swami has available to you. Swami, any final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and demonstrate divine omnipresence with scientific certainty. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.